Good morning, everybody. It's so great to see you in church this morning. We're going to land later in Luke chapter 17, if you want to go ahead and find that now so you don't have to fumble for it later, Luke chapter 17. But we're doing the second installment on what I'm calling an occasional series. Occasional because it's not sequential. It's not week by week by week. But every so often, between now and the end of the year, when I get a chance to come up, I'm going to invite you back to a spiritual practice of reflection, a spiritual practice of just sort of time out, pause. God, what are you saying to me? Where are you working with me right now? What do you want to say to me? What do you want to show me? And it grows out of the word Selah, which is a biblical word. It's a psalmish word. It's a musical notation, really. And it's an invitation to pause and wait. I was taught it this way when I was a kid growing up. When you come to the word Selah in the Psalms, it's a way to say, stop and think about what you just read. Don't blow past it. Something you just read is meaningful and it needs to soak in. Give it some time. Air it out. Let it soak in. See what it is that I'm trying to say to you through that. And I want to invite you into this spiritual practice. And I introduced to you last time this memory verse, Psalm 46:10, be still and know that I am God. Because there's a promise in God's word that says, your word have I hidden in my heart that I might not sin against you. In those crunch times, when you need something from Jesus, it's the parts that you've actually hidden in your heart that he's going to be able to call back up. So I want you to say this with me because I want you to hide it in your heart. Be still and know that I am God. You say it with me. Be still and know that I am God. Psalm 46:10. You got to say that part. Otherwise, when you get ready to remember it, you won't remember where it is, and then you'll have to Google it, and that doesn't feel very spiritual. So say it again. Be still and know that I am God. Say it again, Psalm 46:10. Be still and know that I am God. Be still and know that I am God. Psalm 46:10. It's a way to say, Lord, I want to hear from you. And I introduced you to a series of questions. They're reflective questions that maybe you could use as a guide in those timeout kind of moments. These questions, where am I seeking security? It's just a way to say, okay, what's going on in my life? How do I locate myself on the map right now? Where am I seeking security? What am I trying to find some hope in? What am I trying to find some help in? Where am I seeking security right now in this moment? Where am I seeking security? Where am I finding encouragement? Where am I finding encouragement? You know, because sometimes you find yourself at a really low point and you just need something to build you back up. Where are you going to turn for that? Maybe it's a podcast. Maybe it's music. Maybe there's some people in your life but in fact, here's what I would suggest. I would suggest that maybe you take some time, think through these questions, and build a team, build a strategy to answer these questions. Where am I finding encouragement? Maybe you list a few songs, maybe a couple of movies, maybe a podcast or a particular preacher that you like to listen to that can reliably sort of take you from here to here. But to ask yourself the question, where am I finding encouragement? Because if you don't actually interrupt the process, your brain's just going to keep heading in the direction, which is going to be a downward trajectory. How can I interrupt that process so that I can begin to climb? What is it in my life, or maybe more like, who is it in my life that's calling me to level up? Where can I turn for someone who's going to come alongside, who's going to lift me up, who's going to encourage me, who's going to help me, who's going to bless me? Who do I have in my life like that? And maybe you say, well, it's my spouse. Well, hopefully she's one of the team, or he is one of the team that can help you that way. But it's probably not enough if that's the only person. You kind of need to build a team because sometimes when you're down here, she's right there with you, you know? So where are you going to turn? Who is it in your life? To whom will you turn to call out the best in you? As Scripture says in one place, to spur you on to love and good works. Where are you going to turn for that? Who's the one that's calling you to level up? Where do you find awe in your life? Where do you find something that just causes you to stop and takes your breath away? You know the power of a good deep breath? Maybe it's a sunrise. Maybe it's a sunset. I don't know. What is it that causes you to step back and say, wow, God, that was you. Maybe it's mountains. Maybe it's oceans. Here's the thing. If you don't answer that question, if you don't figure out where you can turn to have that, oh my God, moment, not in a sacrilegious way, in a deeply personal and holy way, oh my God, if you don't answer that question, the enemy is going to offer you other oh my God places that will not be holy, that will not be lifting you up, that will not be leveling you up. I think that's what causes a lot of people to go into this pit of despair. Where do your eyes take you? And this last one, what brings harmony to your life? S-E-L-A-H, Selah. What brings harmony to you? Where am I finding security? Where am I looking to for encouragement? Who's calling me to level up? What leads me to awe? And what is it that I can turn to help bring some harmony back to my life? Because Lord knows there's a million things calling you into disharmony. True? Anybody? Come on, crowd participation. True? There's a million things calling you into disharmony. So what is it that reintegrates your soul? What is it that brings the pieces back together in a way that begins to make sense again? In a way that begins to come together? What is it that's bringing you to those places? It's an important team of responses that you get for that can lead you to this life of reflection. So what is Selah? It's a spiritual practice of reflection that leads you to an intimate relationship with Jesus. I think a lot of us came to know Jesus maybe years ago, and we got this deal of, I asked Jesus in my heart, I'm going to go to heaven when I die. I'm trying really hard between now and then to live up to that. But in the meantime, is there a personal connection? Is there what one author I like to read calls, are you an intimate ally with Jesus? Are you in this ongoing conversation with Jesus that allows you to walk with him and in step with him? And you may say, that sounds kind of new agey to me. Oh yeah, well, maybe it goes all the way back to that old hymn, and he walks with me, and he talks with me, and he tells me I am his own. What is it that brings you to that kind of place? Brings you to that kind of place with Jesus. That notion of push the pause button, call a timeout, look for a reset when you find yourself going in the wrong direction. I think that there are an awful lot of people who have tried Christianity as far as they know how to try it. They came to that place, they prayed the prayer, and then they said, okay, someday that will all reach its fulfillment. But what if you're the kind of person who says, I don't want to wait till I die to know peace. I don't want to live waiting for some kind of a connection with God. I want to live that now. This is your ticket to that kind of relationship. I believe that if you can plant the seeds of Selah in your life now, where am I finding security? Where am I finding encouragement? What's leveling me up? Where do I stand in awe of God? What brings harmony to my life? If you can plant the seeds of Selah, what you're going to find is the fruit that grows on the end of that branch is shalom, that peace with God that only Jesus can bring. Jesus said there's a thief who wants to steal and kill and destroy, that kind of peace with God, who wants to steal and kill and destroy, that kind of groundedness with God. But I've come that you might have life and have it to the full. That's what he's talking about when the word shalom comes up. It's a peace that passes understanding, a peace that nobody else even gets. It's a peace, it's a wholeness, it's a wellness. It's not just an absence of conflict, it's the presence of God in your life. And if you could develop, if you could cultivate that spiritual practice of reflection, that spiritual practice of, God, what do you want to say to me? God, what do you want me to see? What do you want me to know? What do you want me? If you could cultivate that heart, if you could cultivate that practice, what you're going to find is that the Christianity you enjoy is the Christianity you were hoping for in the first place. Jesus said in one place, he said, come to me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, I'll give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light. And if that's not your experience of Christianity, maybe you could cultivate this practice and find that God actually has something more for you there. I introduced this question last time we were talking about this. Is Selah a must-have or just a nice-to-have? Do you have to do this? Do you have to live a life of reflection? Do you have to cultivate this practice? And the answer is no, I guess not. But I could just give you some indicators that I recognize in my own life when Selah is kind of slipping through my fingers. You know, I mean, it's sometimes it's known mostly by its absence, right? I made this acronym. I'm not usually an acronym kind of guy. You know, Selah, S-E-L-A-H, security. I'm usually not that guy. It feels a little cheesy. But honestly, since I started thinking about it and meditating on it, I've come up with like 8 or 10 different acronyms for it. So here's one to be recognized by its absence. When I sort of come to myself and say, wait a minute, something's off inside, something's hinky inside, usually a signal to me that that's happening is I begin to feel really scattered. Do you know what I mean, scattered? Just like mind in 100 directions, 100 different things pulling at you, vying for your attention, vying for your affection, 100 different things, and you just feel you can't focus, you can't bring any alignment to it, exhausted. And not just physically exhausted, although that's part of it, but mentally exhausted. You know what I'm talking about? You tracking with me? Exhausted, emotionally exhausted. Do you know what I'm... Are you with me? Are you tracking? Because here's what I want you to find a touch point with me in this so that you'll get hungry for what I'm talking about. Do you ever feel scattered? I'm guessing you do. I know I do. Do you ever feel that sense of exhaustion? Physical, yes, but mental, emotional, even spiritual, even to the point where you say, I just don't even know if I've got it in me. I don't even know if I've got enough energy to go to church today, even though I think I should and maybe I would get something out of it, but I don't even know if I've got enough focus to pay attention. Exhausted on all fronts. Scattered, exhausted, leery, just suspicious, given everything and everyone the side eye in my life. You know what I'm talking about? You know, why did she say that? What was that tone about? You know, everything that comes and just having this sense of, I don't know, this doesn't feel right. It feels like something's just off. Scattered, exhausted, leery, anxious, and hurried. Just hurried. Pushed, always 2 steps behind, always about half a beat behind the note. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? Come on, do like this if you know what I'm saying. Come on, some of you know what I'm saying and you're not nodding. I mean, this is the kind of thing that if this is your experience, perhaps cultivating the practice of reflection, the practice of Selah, is actually going to be It's going to save you. It's going to really draw you in and draw you out. So let's look at an example, I think, of Selah in practice in the Gospels. Luke chapter 17, if you've got it, you can pull it up on your phone, you can pull it up in your Bible, or I'll just read it to you. Luke chapter 17, Jesus is beginning to make his way toward Jerusalem, and he comes across this moment, this event. There's 10 guys who have leprosy. Leprosy is this visual, visible estrangement. It's a skin disease, an ailment, and it leaves people, it feels itchy, it feels off. People begin to recognize it and they pull back. It's noted as old in the Old Testament as Leviticus, and people begin to be excluded because of it. It's sort of an umbrella term for lots of different skin diseases, but all of them are off-putting to the rest of the community. And people begin to say, once they recognize it, they say, I don't want to catch that from you, so I'm going to distance myself. In fact, I can't distance myself from you, so I'm going to distance you from the community. That's what happens. That's what happens. And people have to withdraw from the community. They withdraw from their families. Now, obviously, if you had something like that, if you knew that it was going to cause you to be ostracized, you would probably hide it as long as you could, which means that by the time it gets bad enough that you've got to acknowledge it, it's pretty far gone. And if this is starting to sound like a parable of secret sin in your life, in my life, that's exactly what it is. That's exactly what it is. There's this sense that I think dwells in an awful lot of folks that says, if you knew the real me, I wouldn't be welcome here on any given Sunday morning. If you knew my deepest, darkest secrets, you wouldn't be aware. So I'm going to keep those secrets hidden. I'm going to keep them buried. I'm going to keep them sequestered away from you. And I'm going to make sure that you don't know anything about what's going on in me. And then when it does break the surface, it's got such deep roots that you find yourself literally excommunicated from the community. Jesus finds these 10 guys, they have leprosy. And anyway, so let's read it together. It's Luke chapter 17, beginning at verse 11. Jesus was on his way to Jerusalem, and he traveled along the border between Samaria and Galilee. Now, the border between Samaria and Galilee is the border between us and them. Just so you know, right? I mean, the Samaritans, you know, Galilee is us, Samaria is them. And he's traveling on the border between us and them. And he's walking this line of the people who feel like they're insiders and the people who know they're not insiders, but they're trying to be. And he's in this borderland. And I think a lot of us live our Christianity in this borderland. Not really at home in either place. You know, not really at home and at peace on Sunday morning in church, but trying to feel like I fit in, and not really at home in the world and in all the things that are pulling me aside there, but I want to fit in, and I'm looking for a place to belong, but I'm living in this borderland, and I don't know where I'm supposed to be. Jesus was on his way to Jerusalem, and he traveled along the border between Samaria and Galilee. And as he was going into a village, 10 men who had leprosy met him. They weren't in the village, they were near the village because they were kicked out of the village because their sin had been found out, their burden had been found out, their brokenness was seen and recognized, and now they had to stand a long way off and holler unclean whenever anybody came near. As he was going into the village, 10 men who had leprosy met him, and they stood at a distance just like they were supposed to, and they crawled out in a loud voice, just like they were supposed to. The prescription was, if you have leprosy and you're excluded from your village, anytime somebody comes within earshot of you, you've got to holler out in a loud voice, unclean, unclean, stay back. Because they don't want to catch what you've got. So they stood at a distance just like they were supposed to. They called out in a loud voice just like they were supposed to. But instead of identifying by their brokenness this time, instead of simply owning and identifying with what's wrong with them, this time there's something, who knows what, caused them to have this glimmer of hope, this moment of anticipation that maybe, just maybe, this encounter could be different. And they cried out in a loud voice. This time they said, Jesus, Master, have pity on us. But it's not just have pity on us, it's have mercy on us. It's not just feel sorry for us, but Lord, in Jesus' name, would you do something about my brokenness? Would you do something about my isolation? Would you do something about my exclusion? Jesus. And I don't know why, I don't know what even gave them the thought that maybe they could have something here. If it was in the Hebrew, it would be the word hesed, which is the word for the God who loves even when there's nothing to love about me. The God who is kind to me even when I deserve to be cut off from him. The God who keeps his covenant with me. And Jesus, he's moved with compassion. He sees these 10 guys, they're crying out to him, Lord Jesus, have mercy on us, have pity on us. And Jesus sees them and he says, when he saw them, he said, go and show yourselves to the priest. Here's the deal. If by chance you got healed of leprosy, cured of leprosy, if the leprosy went away, which almost never happened, right? But there was a mechanism for it. If through some crazy luck or fate, the skin disease clears up, you go and present yourself to the priest where you are searched inch by inch all over your entire body, just in case there's still any piece hiding, because we know you hid it for a long time before you ever left. You get searched all over, and if you're found to be uninfected, unaffected, then you can be brought back into the fellowship until it shows back up. Because that's always the suspicion, always the fear. It's going to show back up. And how many people do you know who've lived their Christian life in this fear? Maybe I made myself acceptable just long enough to get in the door. I just wonder how long I can keep up this facade of holiness. Crazy thing. They get ready. It says this. Go show yourselves to the priests. And as they went, they were cleansed. Now, frankly, if it was me, I would probably wait to see if I was cleansed and then go. But somehow they had faith enough. Somehow they said, okay, you told me to go, I'll go. So they went. They began to go, and as they went, they were healed. And at some point, they recognized what was happening. Verse 15, one of them, when he saw that he was healed, came back. Praising God in a loud voice, he threw himself at Jesus' feet and thanked him. You know, you're going along, you're thinking, boy, I hope this works, I hope this works. And you're looking down, you say, hey, you know what, I think I'm getting better. Hey, wait a minute, I think maybe I'm healed. And one of the ten, he just, time out, he turns around and goes back to Jesus, throws himself at his feet, gives thanks. And it says, he was a Samaritan. He wasn't an us, he was a them. He was one of those people that you would least expect to actually turn around and go back and give praise to Jesus. But this guy, the least expected, actually is the most bowled over by the idea that maybe, just maybe, I could find grace. And he goes back and he gives thanks to Jesus. Jesus asks, verse 17, were not all 10 cleansed? Where are the other nine? Has no one returned to give praise to God except this foreigner? Now, I gotta say, as I read this, I'm not really comfortable with Jesus calling this guy a foreigner, at least not this way. It feels almost pejorative. He's a Samaritan. It feels kind of racist. It feels like, I don't know, you know, I mean, it's one thing to say foreigner. It's another thing to put that word in Jesus' mouth, and it just feels uncomfortable. But what I think Jesus was doing was offering a teaching moment. Actually, the word for foreigner here is only used once in the New Testament, right here, and only by Jesus. And it is kind of a put-down kind of word. It's only used once in the New Testament, but it's actually used a million times in the first century, because all over the temple are signs in the court of the Gentiles, in the Jewish temple, there are all these signs that say, no foreigners pass this point. And it is a word that is direct enough and obvious enough that if this means you, you know it. You know it. It's an exclusionary word. And for Jesus says, we're not all 10 cleansed. Where are the other nine? Has only one returned to give thanks, and him a foreigner? The one who knew he didn't belong actually has become the only one who belongs. The us, them breaks down here. And all of a sudden, everything I wanted to hide, everything I wanted to keep Jesus from knowing about me, all of a sudden it doesn't disqualify me anymore. And there's something about Jesus. He goes on. He says this. Jesus says this to the guy. He looks at him. He says, rise and go. Your faith has made you well. That's what it says in my translation here. But actually, that word made well is not this. When it says they were cleansed, it's actually the family of words from where we get our word catharsis. It's like Jesus blew it away. There was a cleansing. It just blew it away. But this word, when he says, go and Pete, rise and go, your faith has made you well, it's the word where we get this, rise and go, your faith has saved you. It has healed you. It has shalomed you. Rise and go. Your faith has made you whole. I think this guy, in the practice of Selah, stop, examine, linger. I think this guy, in the process of planting seeds of Selah, is beginning to reap the fruit of Shalom. And so I want to invite you into this. I want to invite you not to know something you didn't know before, but I want to invite you to practice something that you haven't practiced before. So if you want to take a snap of this screen, just so that you can use it later in your time alone with God, do that. But I want you to be able to put down your stuff and close your eyes as we walk through this spiritual practice of reflection together. So if you were to take this moment and call a time out, stop, time out, take a breath, take a minute, take a knee, stop, be still, and know that I'm God. Let this be a holy moment, a moment for you to have an encounter beyond yourself and beyond your scope. Stop and examine where you're at and what has happened to you, what has brought you to this moment. You know that map at the mall that says you are here? You can't figure out how to get where you're going unless you know where you're starting from. Where are you? Where are you with Jesus right now? Are you one of those people like my friend who say, you know, I asked Jesus in my heart years ago. I know I'm going to heaven when I die. I'm just trying to keep my head above water for now. Okay. Name it. The unexamined life is not worth living. Examine it. Figure out, where am I with Jesus? Maybe you say, you know what? I've known about Jesus all these years, but I've never actually known Jesus. Okay, that's fair. It's a good thing to know. It's a lousy place to stay. Maybe today's your day to say, God, I get it. You're God, I'm not. I need you. I don't even know exactly what I need you for, but I know I need you. I'm not saying I deserve you. God, forgive me. I've tried and I have failed and I have sinned. God, I need you. Maybe today's your day for that. And if today's your day for that, trust me, it is a simple act to step into the light and out of the darkness. Jesus, come into my life. Where are you? Where are you with Jesus? Where are you? Where are you in this moment? With your family? Where are you in your journey? Stop, examine, linger. Just decide to camp out here for a minute. Linger and experience the weight of this moment. This could be a this changes everything moment for you. This really could be a life-altering encounter with God for you. Let the weight of the moment, let it weigh what it weighs. God, I feel you. Maybe you're not even comfortable with your feelings. Okay. But you have this sense that God's got something to say to you. And so you ask the questions, you air it out. Okay, Lord, air it out. What do you want to say to me? What do you want to say to me in this moment? What do you want to say to me about this crisis? What do you want to say to me? I'm listening. God, what do you want me to see? What do you want me to understand? What do you want me to know down in my bones? What do you want me to live from? What do you want me to be convinced of? Just linger long enough to hear the voice of God. Maybe a prayer like this would be helpful. God, would you speak in a way that I can know it's you? Would you speak in a way that you would give me ears to hear it? Would you show me in a way that you would take the blinders off my eyes? And then the H, Selah, right? Stop, examine, linger, ask. The H is hold on to it. Don't let this slip through your fingers. This is a powerful moment, but you could solidify it. You could nail it down. So Bryce, in just a minute, is gonna lead us in a precious old hymn. It's an amazing notion. What a friend you could have in Jesus. That he could actually love you. That he could know all there is to know about you and call you his friend. What a friend. Yeah.